here to In Focus on News Radio KMAN. I'm Brandon Peoples, and our next segment, we're going to have Chad Bunger, Manhattan Assistant Director of Community Development, here joining us. Chad, first of all, good to have you in studio.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you betcha here. You've brought in some information here regarding resilient Riley County. This has to do with the flood resiliency plan.
Yeah, we're, from following the September flood, we've put our heads together and tried to figure out as the city and the county of just how best to look at this again and figure out ways to better protect folks. And so what we've come up with is this resiliency plan where we will take another look at what gets flooded, how it gets flooded. But I think more importantly, something that we haven't looked at as close is who gets flooded. Look at the individuals, the neighborhoods that it get inundated and have been inundated in the past by floodwaters, and find better ways to protect them, be it structural things, if we have to build ponds or walls or whatever it is, or do better job of letting them know about flood insurance or where they can find information about flood warnings, those sort of things. So we're looking at the gamut again. We looked at this back in 2011 through 13. Obviously, it's flooding, and Mother Nature will do what Mother Nature wants to do, and so we can't really prevent the flood risk, but we sure hope to reduce the flood risk.
Yeah, absolutely. There's nothing you can do about that here, but what are some maybe things you guys learned from the September incident in particular?
I think the biggest takeaway for me is, and I knew this going into or before it, but there will always be another storm, and there will always be a bigger storm. So this storm that happened on September 3rd was bigger than anybody has seen in recent history. It took some of us by surprise of how quickly it came, how much water was there. We knew it could always flood, and it flooded in most areas that we've seen before, but it was bigger, more water. And so that was the big takeaway. And then, just a matter of, all right, now what do we have to do? We all realize it'll flood again, and it could be a worse flood. So what do we need to do to better protect those folks?
All right. Dave is signaling we have a caller on the line, so let's head to the phones. Good morning. You're on In Focus.
Yeah, quoting you, you said we don't know what Mother Nature is going to do. That is 100% correct. Now, I'd like to have your opinion how we can stop this, and I want to know if this idea would make any sense at all. If we did not allow any more building in a flood zone, we have inundated the west side of Manhattan for the last 20 years. We knew it would flood out there. We've got one place that even built I don't know if it's legal or not, but built a wall around their place to protect it. But who in the world ever approved that in the first place to let that be built in there? This runoff is going to get more and more and more and more because we've got more streets there. Built that all out on the south side of Sini. Oh, we've got all kinds of retention ponds. Yeah, for 1-inch rain. Let's plan ahead. Let's start planning and not looking back. We've got to look ahead. Thank you very much. You're doing a good job.
Nah, thank you. Appreciate it. I think being wiser of how we develop in and around and near and even outside of the floodplain is important for us. I think especially after the 2011 flood, we took a different approach. Before then, it was really, well, this is FEMA's floodplain. FEMA says we can do this, so go ahead and do it up to those rules. And after that 2011 flood, we really changed our approach and said, these are our floodplains. And these are the new set of rules. We have higher flood standards that limit the amount of development that can happen in the floodplain. If you do develop in the floodplain and you bring fill in, then you have to take some fill out to reduce that loss of flood capacity or storage. So we're taking those steps. Could we do more? For sure. It's just a matter of working through those and figuring out what's best for our community. But I think we have substantially reduced the amount of development that has occurred in and around the floodplain because of the risks.
Yeah. Well, let's take another call here on In Focus. Good morning. You're on with with us here on News Radio KMAN.
Yes, for you wanting to look at not who gets flooded, but how the flood develops. You know, the people living west of the football stadium parking, that water comes off of there in a torrent, regardless of what kind of rain you get, and comes down through there. And luckily, there are two retention ponds built, one at the medical facility and the other there at the Board of Health, which are working, which would indicate to you, if you're thinking about things, that you need those kind of retention ponds out on our side of the fence towards Fort Riley to restrict that kind of water, to eliminate who gets flooded. We want to know where the water comes from. And in an event, a tornado or any kind of a thing, we need to know what we're going to do with our people. We don't have a level one, level two emergency room for most of us within 50 miles, or even a heart intervention from the stress of these kind of events, whether it's a flood or tornado or a car wreck or whatever. Thank you for developing our lifestyle.
Thanks for those comments. I fully agree with you that detention could be or retention could be a viable option, and we've proven that in Manhattan. Those two ponds that you mentioned, those floodplains were pretty wide through there. I think anybody who's been in Manhattan for more than a couple of years can recall vehicles floating down Tecumseh and Quivira, those streets just south of the health department. That was before we put those ponds in, and then afterwards, that water has significantly been decreased. It doesn't go away, but the mad rush of water there's certainly saved a number of vehicles parked on the street. So those are options, and we've done those kind of ponds in other spots in the city and have reduced the flood risks there. So it's a matter of working with the county and those farmers to figure out kind of that double win or triple win solution where, you know, it makes sense for Manhattan, makes sense for Riley County, makes sense for those farmers, everyone benefits. That way we can get it done. And that's part of this plan, is to study that a lot further and come up with those solutions that make sense both physically. So, yeah, we're going to reduce water, but also financially, because we have a limited pot of money, and figure out what's the best for everybody.
Yeah, getting back to the plan here, kind of explain how the planning committees will work here.
Sure. We've divided it. So we'll try to be a little quicker and a little nimbler than the last go-around. That was a lot of public meetings held about monthly. And so when you get a room full of people with a lot of different ideas, obviously it's tough to pull through consensus. And so what we're going to do here is try to be a little bit more nimble. Certainly you're going to take in people's comments. There'll be a technical group made up of city and county professionals and state and federal professionals that partner with us. I think there's some great opportunity for K-State to be involved in that group too, and we've talked to some of those folks. And then there'll be a small citizen advisory team, about 10 to 12 to 15 folks made up of property owners, residents, tenants, business owners that guide us, guide the process, and give us feedback. So the approach will be, technical team will do research, present it to the citizen group, and then get some guidance, and then push it out to the community in a variety of ways through social media, surveys, public meetings, town hall kind of things, the gamut, to get the community's feedback, because it is a community plan. Take that, digest it, and then start the whole process over through a fairly defined planning process.
Okay. Yep. We got another caller here.
Excellent.
On the line. Good morning. You're on In Focus, News Radio KMAN.
Good morning. Say the bridge on Seth Child Road has too little water capacity going under it. You think about the flooding that happened on the east side of it. It was much lower in elevation than what was on the upper side. You widen that bridge, you let more water go under it. Restriction to flow equals pressure, and that pressure causes that backup. It's either that or you make a pond and put fish in it, and I'll go fishing over there. Okay.
I appreciate that comment.
Take a look at that in your study.
Yep, definitely will. I think everything's on the board for that study, and we're also going to model it. with something that isn't a new kind of model, but we haven't used it here extensively in the county. It's called two-dimensional flood modeling. So it's the value there is you can see a lot of it visually. So you can see where the water comes from in kind of a time series video, how deep the water is, how fast the water moves. And you'll be able to visualize this through video. It's still the same information that we got from older studies, but the visual side really helps, I think, the community understand. You know, maybe it is we need to raise and widen that bridge at Seth Child or Scenic or Fort Riley Boulevard. I don't know. This model is intended to study that so we get a better understanding of where it floods and what some solutions are, and we'll evaluate it both on the impacts, you know, how much is it improved, the situation, and how much does it cost, and what we can afford and do.
All right. Let's take a quick time out here on In Focus. We'll continue our conversation with Chad Bunger when we return on News Radio KMAN.